The following is a Media for Movie Club production.
Welcome back to the Media for Movie Club podcast. I'm John Kissel. With me tonight is Shane Sentner.
Yo.
Sean Riley.
Hello.
And Brian Hartman.
That's me.
We are back to discuss the latest two episodes of Watchmen, entitled Martial Feats of Comanche Horsemanship and She Was Killed by Space Junk. These are the second and the third episodes of HBO's Watchmen series. And it was a little lukewarm. I was a little reticent about this series, kind of curious to see where it would go, what the style would be, what kind of story it planned on telling. And after three episodes, I can safely say I'm all in on this show. The third episode really sealed the deal for me. The introduction of Laurie Blake, formerly the Silk Spectre, formerly played by not good actress, at least in the movie, Malin Ackerman, and now played by very good actress Jean Smart in the TV show. That character really united the series with the source material in a way that the Tulsa characters had not yet for me. But now I'm there. I'm 100% there with this show. What did you guys think about these last two episodes? Real quick, round the horn. Riley?
I thought that they were good. If my only association with Watchmen is the movie. I'm not a graphic comic guy. I'm not a book guy. I don't read.
I'm not a letter guy. I'm not a newspaper guy. I'm not a sign guy.
Hieroglyphics? Get the fuck out.
Give me red octagons. What are those squiggles?
Since I don't know anything about Watchmen, and this is obviously not going the direction that the movie was, I'm really, really lost. I mean, I think it's interesting so far, but I will defend Malin Ackerman. She is a fine young lady who happened to be forced to do a sex scene to Hallelujah.
Oh, God.
And I think that hurt your view of her.
Yeah. That's totally fair. And as we talked about in our first episode discussing this series, as the series treats the movie as nothing. The movie didn't happen. Nothing that happened in the movie, the changes that the movie made to the comic are ignored, and the series is working off of the comic. So yeah, if you haven't read the comic, then sure. What's the deal with all these squids? I would imagine that to be like the main difference. Brian, where are you at? Go ahead. Brian, where are you at after the first episode? Same place, higher? What do you think?
Oh, for the next two?
Yeah.
I'm in the same spot. I've been in since the beginning.
All right.
The intro hooked me. And at this point, I'm just really curious to see what in the world is actually going on.
Shane?
I'm all in, still. 100%
okay.
All in.
Staying on
this,
a high
this
pace.
This shit was made for me, though. This is, like, perfect. This is right in my wheelhouse, so.
Shane, you probably did read the graphic novel.
I actually have not read this
I'm one. The only one that has.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so, this is the only comic book I've ever read, is Watchmen.
I've been kind of, it's like, I've been saving this because I know it's supposed to be really good.
It is very good.
It's, yeah. So I need to actually do it. I've just been like, it's on a pedestal, and I'm kind of not concerned about ruining it.
It's on the old bookshelf. Riley, that's a shelf that has books on it. And books are
I'm familiar with them. Mine usually have toys on them.
All right, fair enough. So we're not going to go blow by blow through the plot of these two episodes like we did during our Game of Thrones series, but just to hit the high points, I think the main thing from these two episodes is that we get introduced to Laurie Blake, formerly the Silk Spectre 2, whose mom was one of the original superhero masked vigilantes. I keep wanting to call them superheroes and not superheroes. Her mom was the original Silk Spectre from the 40s. As she spent a good chunk of her life, Laurie did also being a vigilante. Although the thing with her and her mom is that they both did not wear masks. They just walked around with their face out, punching people. And now she's on the opposite side of this debate. She is working for the FBI, setting up masked vigilantes for capture. She's staging bank robberies, and the first time we see her, to capture a Batman type dude, and she is enlisted to go out to Tulsa to investigate Crawford's murder. And we spend pretty much the entire third episode with her. There's a lot of intercutting between events as they proceed in Tulsa. And whether it's current or in the past, it's unclear, but she's also communicating with Dr. Manhattan, who she used to date. She's telling him jokes that are deeply metaphorical and allegorical about the show.
Well, that would be after she's in Tulsa, because it's outside of...
Yeah, that's the Tulsa phone booth.
Yeah, because it's outside of the restaurants that we know.
Yes, that's a recognizable place indicator.
Yeah, good. That was really weird.
Good.
I think it was even after she had sex with the subordinate.
Oh, okay. So. So that's the end of the episode chronologically, and then it's okay. Great.
Yeah.
Can I ask a question? I have two questions.
Yes.
Number one, Shane, was the FBI thing that was surely entrapment, right? Or am I wrong? Tell me I'm wrong.
Okay. Is it entrapment when they coerce him into doing something illegal, not just set him up for something? That's more of a sting.
Yeah. I mean, but for them, yeah.
If a cop walks up to a drug dealer and says, "I would like to buy drugs,"
I'd have to look at the elements of entrapment. I'd have to look at that.
Get back to me.
There's some specific rules. Yeah.
Next question. Why did they choose the Iberian pig when it's like clearly a place people can figure out where they're actually filming and it's not Tulsa? It seemed like a strange choice to me.
This is alternate timeline. So in the alternate timeline, the Iberian pig is in Tulsa.
Yeah.
It's weird that all those little shops show up right in the same place.
It's really good for the Iberian pig that they weren't made to change the sign. I think that restaurant experience is like not significant necessarily, but like a bump in at least web traffic. I just watched The Shining sequel, and part of that was filmed at the theater that I saw it in, the Plaza in Atlanta, and they changed the sign. It usually says Plaza Cinema on top, and in the movie it says Cinema. So good on the Iberian pig.
It is a little jarring knowing that, but I'm over it.
Yeah, it's not a deal breaker by any means. I like the idea.
I feel special.
I like the idea that they've set up these prayer booths in just random places all over the country to Dr. Manhattan, and just one of them happens to be in this random square in this random city. I think that's very like her introduction into the series and the building out of the world beyond Tulsa. A lot of what drew me to the show, not only the source material, is the alternative history aspect and like what's this world like with these various. With these small changes that have ramped up into bigger and bigger changes, and like she is a direct way into what those kind of changes are. Her acting in that prayer booth. This has been a series with some pretty good acting so far. Regina King, obviously, but her at the very end, just coming to this realization that if the series is made for Shane, that conversation is made for me in the sense that like she knows that God exists. She had sex with him. And she also knows how totally nonchalant and uncaring he is about humanity and how pointless this entire endeavor is. And she was as close to true power as a person could be. And it didn't care at all. It just fucked off one day. It could not have cared less about humanity, and she still finds herself in this booth making this plea to it. I thought that was just phenomenal. Like, what if God came down and he sucked and then he left? Like, how would that change people's relationship to the universe? And like, this series is now interacting with that exact idea in a way that Watchmen did in the comic books a little bit, but I think the series is more interested in, especially after Damon Lindelof, who runs the series, also made The Leftovers, which I feel like, having not seen that show, that is also very much interested in. Like, what if God just sucked and everybody figured it out? Great stuff from Jean Smart, who has long been kicking ass on TV.
And again, like another character. It's hard. Are we on her side? Are we not on her side? She doesn't really. She seems like the thing she's chasing still. She's still a vigilante. She makes two decisions to shoot people in this episode.
Well, yeah. It's easier, I think, to take out a suicide bomber than it is to torture suspects like the Tulsa police are doing.
She endangered everyone's life.
She did.
Reckless.
She has.
Then she shot a man in the back.
She did that. She also did that. Yeah.
And she gives a speech about the people who are. Is it she?
I think she has plausible deniability there in the sense that she knows a lot about the superhero she's chasing, and she probably knows that he's heavily armored. Even if she throw, it's not great by any means that she shoots a fleeing suspect in the back.
Yeah, negligence.
No, I think she was totally happy to kill him because when the other guy was like, "How'd you know his armor was going to stop those bullets?" She just kind of kept walking. She was like disappointed that the guy wasn't dead.
Yeah. And is she the one who gives a speech about people who are doing good things?
Mm-hmm.
But and then they realize
everybody she's ever arrested thought they were the good guy.
Yeah. And then it's like that's her. She thinks she's doing the right thing still. So in her actions,
it's almost like having that kind of power over people's lives is inherently corrupting.
Yes, fucking great. She's just fucking great.
We learn more about Ozymandias, wherever he is. I was going to say in England, but I don't know that he's in England. He could be truly anywhere. He could be on Mars.
Is that Jeremy Irons?
That's Jeremy Irons who says his name for the first time. I guess it's not. It was never clear that he was who he was, but he puts on the old costume. He says his name is Adrian Veidt. He's Ozymandias. He's a smart guy who blew the world up to bring about world peace. I don't think he killed any of his clones in the first episode. He kills several of his clones in these next two episodes. He lights one on fire for the sake of a play rehearsal, and he shoots one into the sky, presumably building some kind of escape suit, that's not working. And he lands frozen and gets his face kicked in because his inventor is frustrated. This is all very fun. Just to figure out what his plan is. But he's being held captive by someone who refers to the person who's being held captive as their loyal servant. So, like, who's in charge here? Is he... There's a lot of questions.
This feels
very... Having not seen Lost, this feels very Lost to me.
It is a little, but it's a little more clear than Lost. The questions are a little more focused, but... It feels like maybe he's created his own prison, and he's created someone...
This is a test.
Yeah, keep him there, and he's finally grown bored of all this.
You know, you guys are going to be pissed when that guy doesn't meet any other characters until season 3.
I really like the set dressing in this segment. I love his, like, Da Vinci-esque steampunk warehouse where he's just making do with buffalo skins and steam and whatever else he can get his hands on. I love that he's growing tomatoes on a tree and that they are not good. Like, especially... Because he has his history with Dr. Manhattan, who can just create shit at will. And Ozymandias fancies himself as the next best thing, but he still can't do it. His tomatoes are bad, despite what the game warden says. All that stuff I love. And then the Tulsa characters, which, again, are the least interesting part of the show for me, if only because these are new characters that I don't have a previous connection to, and I'm slowly figuring out more and more about them. We get a flashback to the White Knight, where Angela was rescued somehow. Unclear in the scene, unclear when she wakes up. Crawford, who also survived, doesn't tell her what happened. I'm sure he was involved somehow. We're going to find more about it. Her partner was killed, and she adopted his children. You know, we had questions about that in the first episode. We see that Crawford lived on a giant plantation estate. In our most recent podcast about movies, we talked about David Fincher. And David Fincher made Girl with a Dragon Tattoo, and that movie also features a giant plantation that is ominously driven up to. And whenever you see a giant house like that, you just think about all the stuff that happened there and all the terrible stuff that may very well still be happening there. Just those giant houses are very evocative, and it's interesting that a sheriff in a mid-sized city would live in one. So he also has Klan robes in his closet. So great. We're going to learn more about Crawford. We mentioned the suicide bombing scene at Crawford's funeral. That was very tense. I was surprised at how tense it was. you didn't get a sense that the bomber was coming up so close, and then all of a sudden he's striding towards this group of people.
I appreciated how difficult it was to drag the guy's dead body across the ground. Normally that's just like careless, like throw that bastard over here in movies. And that's a 200-pounder fully clothed dragging across the ground. I appreciated that.
Yeah, I never realized how heavy the human body dead weight was until I had to hold one of Blair's legs during birth after the she got the epidural. And I was like, here, grab a leg, and I dropped it. Just dropped her damn leg up. It's like, oh my god.
Nobody noticed anything. You didn't hurt her.
No, I didn't hurt her.
Dead.
It was wild.
I would have laughed. When I was a teenager getting teeth pulled to make room for braces, I laughed at the dentist as he was pounding away at my teeth. Like, I can't feel a fucking thing, and you've got this heavy screwdriver that you're using a hammer with on me. it really made me laugh. Weird shit in these episodes. Just everything with the granddad, the guy in the wheelchair, that also feels very lost to me.
Yeah,
like it's the same car that gets lifted off the ground at the end of the second episode, is dropped in front of Lori at the end of the third episode. She certainly seems to think that it's Dr. Manhattan in some way. It probably is. Why? Who the hell knows? I don't think there's any sense of who that... Well, I mean, we know who he is, but what role he plays or why he's even playing a role at all is very much an open question. And it's also weird that the castle that Ozymandias lives in was also built by Manhattan on Mars. You see that in like satellite footage. And it's also built by Angela's very weird looking son.
I don't think I noticed that.
I didn't either. I saw it on Twitter.
Okay.
Just very strange. I would totally believe that that kid was anything. The kid has a very strange look.
That kid was building that thing and then he like knocked the shit out of it, it felt to me like he's got secret superpowers. Because it didn't look like he was building Legos. It was like he was just shoving magnets together or something.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if that was just the toy itself that floats or he was floating it. Like in the aftermath of Ozymandias, you know, showing making a psychic squid appear in a major city. Like an after effect of that was like people experienced nightmares and psychic headaches for, I think, forever after that. So,
well, all child psychics are weirdos, so that it fits.
I didn't even consider that the kid had powers until just now. I feel kind of lame about that.
If the kid was a generic mop-top 11-year-old, I wouldn't think anything of it. But the kid looks like the kid looks how he looks. So I would believe anything.
The kid's seen some shit in real life too.
Yeah, real history that the show has squeaked in, the German World War I propaganda that is dropped on black U.S. soldiers is real, and that further ties the Tulsa father to the kid that he tapes it to after he sends him off after the riots, and then the kid is almost certainly the mysterious old man. I don't know who else it could be.
Oh, I think there's no question on that one.
Yeah.
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 But again, just like, why are these people important of all the people? I guess they're important because on the surface, they're Angela's ancestors, but I don't know what's so special about her. She seems to be one vigilante of many.
The very lost
part
of it.
Yeah.
100%.
Somewhat frustrating, but there's something to be said for characters that know everything about each other, not just having an expositional conversation like, as you know, this happened to you. That's always very annoying. At the same time, that gets a lot of mystery out of the way. That is often just mystery for mystery's sake.
Yeah.
So we'll see how long I have patience with that. I have all the patience for it now because the series is three episodes in, but we'll revisit in like episode 8. The warehouse police torture interrogation chamber for the cavalry. Chicago police, of course, had a very similar, if not identical, operation going for a period of time. And the rookie FBI agent tosses off that Ozymandias is believed to be hiding in Argentina. Of course, Nazis are also, we're also hanging out in Argentina.
Oh, nice.
So, I believe that this show is doing everything on purpose. And I don't know, it could have been any country.
Yes.
It could have been any country, and it was in Argentina.
Intentional. Everything is intentional and matters.
And John, for our subscribers who listen to every episode, how do you feel about Nazis?
That's right.
I think in certain contexts, they should have won. But the context is very important. We're talking about a fictional TV show in which they should have won. Just want to be clear on that. And then the alternative history part, the American Hero story that everybody's watching is both a direct shot at Zack Snyder, I think, because it's filmed exactly like Zack Snyder filmed Watchmen, with a lot of the speed ramping and the ultra violence that is ramped up in a way that even the comic book didn't engage in. And that was, they could have just drawn whatever they wanted to, but Zack Snyder insisted on bones snapping out of people's skin and just a crazy escalation that was utterly unnecessary in the movie. In addition to the Hallelujah song, there are many unnecessary parts of that movie. And then Ryan Murphy as well with the American Blank story. That just seems like a friendly rivalry to me. Like, Damon Lindelof is a TV hitmaker, and so is Ryan Murphy. I don't know. It's just interesting that everybody is... In the real world, it's like everybody is interested in the O.J. Simpson trial. And then this alternate world, everybody's interested in justice and what his life was like. Protests in front of the equivalent of like the Montgomery Legacy Museum, better known colloquially perhaps as the Lynching Museum, Lynching Memorial. The idea of there being protesters in front of that I think is very interesting.
Yeah, well, look at Twitter.
Yeah. And then Rorschach's journal, which the viewer knows, the viewer that's familiar with the source material knows, is an accurate description of what happened, is angrily dismissed by the FBI as just like conspiracy mongering nonsense that doesn't need to be looked into. And in the vast, vast, vast majority of cases, if not all cases, that is correct and accurate. In this case, in this one case, it's not. So it's a pretty good show, guys.
Yeah. We kind of run out of steam because this is our second pile of the night, but it'd be,
what?
It'd be nice to get a little more in depth into this going forward. I'm looking forward to kind of some of these reveals, the addition of Silk Spectre in the third episode. Actually, it was almost frustrating because we're like, it's like, I hear what you're saying, like, let's get to it. What happened to Lou Gossett Jr. Lou Gossett Jr. And I want to get back to that. I do find that interesting.
She's
a great character. Great character.
That whole thing seems integral. Whatever Lou Gossett Jr. is doing.
Yeah.
And the only thing that he relates to in the third episode is that his car is dropped in front of Lori.
I'm glad they waited two episodes to get her in here and
get the
groundwork done.
I agree. So I think it's correct.
So she was killed by space junk. Was that referring to the car falling from the sky or the 2-foot Dr. Manhattan vibrator that she had?
That did not feel lost. I thought like they could have stretched out what is in this briefcase indefinitely. It glows. It looks fancy and secret.
It was Marcellus Wallace's briefcase. Yeah. Dr. Manhattan's dick.
Exactly. And they reveal it at the end of the episode as a giant blue dildo.
Fucking wonderful.
Yeah, this great. We don't have to think about it anymore.
This show's so great.
She's still into Dr. Manhattan.
That's
great.
A proper,
who wouldn't be?
That's
he's
a proper
God.
Fuck you to your audience. Like, oh, what's going to be in there? What's going to be in there? It's a big blue dick.
Good for Damon Lindelof, whose work I'm not familiar with, but he seems to be less full of himself, perhaps.
Yeah, lessons were learned.
Anything else? Yeah,
I got something. Last time we talked about, you know, whether you're on the side of the police or
the racists,
and we talked about being in the middle. I feel like I wasn't in the middle. You guys are more in the middle. I feel like when they show the scenes from The White Knight and these couple episodes, it's, I feel like you got to lean more police at this point.
Oh, wow. I'm going the opposite way. I am more with the racists. I'm just making sound bites. Three episodes in, even though we know that the cavalry are like a coordinated terror group, it's so obvious that they didn't kill Crawford. And the police are just raiding this community brutally. And then taking the people in that concentration camp are not there because they have reason to be there. They're tied to Crawford's crime scene in any way. They're just people that lived in that community.
Yeah.
They're scooping people up and torturing them.
Yeah. Like when we were talking about the first episode, I did forget that they did just say very blatant racist things. So my bad on that. But yeah, the police get all these rules for protection, and they've just put more power in their own hands again and don't give a shit about anyone. There's no consequences at all for them. At all.
And I think this is an important thing with Lori as well. As a person who never wore a mask, no matter how flimsy the fabric is, you know, it is still a separation between the people who are tasked with maintaining order in a society and the people that they work amongst. No matter how justified it might be, like that's part of it. You're creating a separation between people that should be members of the same community.
So you don't think the cavalry was responsible for the White Knight?
I do. Yeah, I think that's all above board. There's surely at some point in the season we're going to see what happens between Angela being wounded and having a shotgun stuck in her face and waking up in the hospital. Something else is happening there.
Crawford's involved with that.
If it was as simple as her husband saved her, then that would have been shown.
Right.
So probably the White Knight did that, or the cavalry did all that. Great, they're terrorists. But that doesn't mean we have to monitor all the mosques and register Muslims everywhere. Right. And if you see something, say something. And beat up Sikhs because they might be associated in some way. It's not going to be as simple as racist bad.
Right. Oh, I don't think it is. I'm just saying, like, in the average viewer, when you're shown the scenes from The White Knight and the guy trying to blow up the funeral, like, I have no sympathy for the... God, I can never remember their names.
Cavalry,
that's it.
Every time I write it, I have to think, is it Calvary or Cavalry? And I honestly don't know. Is it Cavil?
Cavil.
Okay, Cavalry. Great.
Anyway.
Yeah, fine. There's a terrorist group amongst these racists, and there are also people that live amongst them that just happen to live in the same zip code. And it can't be as simple as just round them all up.
I'm not saying I'm 100%. I'm just saying in the slider between, you know, sure, the police and the cavalry, I feel like these two episodes slid just a little bit towards the police and against the cavalry, just based on the White Knight and trying to bomb a funeral.
Sure.
That Ben Franklin quote about giving away parts of your liberty, meaning you don't deserve the liberty, something like that.
Yeah, those who would trade liberty for security deserve neither. Something to that effect. I think it was Jefferson, although I don't know. One of those guys.
I have one comment and one question.
Yeah.
The comment being that I'm fairly certain the senator is going to turn out to be one of the more bad guys that, like, totally without fair. With no ambiguity. The question is, are we going to see the panda masked guy who was questioning the use of lethal force on the police force ever again?
I do have questions about panda face.
Yeah.
Panda back.
I think we for sure see him again. I don't know about
he's my center. Favorite.
Yeah, that Russian guy is just a fascist.
Yeah.
That guy's a jerk.
Yeah.
It's a good show. We recommend it. And we're going to return in a couple weeks to discuss episodes 4 and 5. In the meantime, you can check us out on the internet at MuticaMovie.club. Follow us on Facebook at Mutica Movie Club. Follow us on Twitter at Mutica Movical. We are going to be starting on our next trio of movies in the coming weeks. Dolomite is My Name on Netflix, Scott Pilgrim versus the World, and Private Life. I believe all of those are on Netflix. That'll do it. That'll do it for this episode, guys. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks, John.
Yeah. See ya.
Have a good night.